Dormammu, I've come to bargain.
I feel something.
You feel it?
Yes, I feel it.
That's the force.
Do you lay eggs?
What?
No.
Blow that piece of junk out of the sky!
Quite a lot's happened. You and I had a fight recently.
Did I win?
No, I won easily.
I am Groot.
I am Steve Rogers.
Traitor!
Who in the hell do you think you are?
I have spoken.
Hey guys, welcome to WDWNT Nerd Alert. I'm your host, Jehoverty, and joining me tonight is Jack McCarthy.
Howdy, folks.
And Fedra Ekris.
Hello, everybody.
The gang is all here.
Yay!
And what's good about three.
Well, it's nice to have all three of us together because I think we all have a lot to talk about, which is kind of cool. So basically, yeah, on tonight's show, what we're going to do is we're going to review the latest episode of What If. I'll be reviewing Star Wars Visions. And Jack has finally gotten the chance to see Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings. So we'll hear about that, too. And we'll also go over some news, too. But Fedra, so what have you been up to lately? Have you seen anything?
I saw the most recent, I guess, GI movie called Snake Eyes. And yeah, that's kind of been it. It's been a little quiet this time around.
Oh, yeah. So did you like it?
A little bit. I guess I would still rate it overall very harshly in my 4 to 5 range just because it was so predictable. Like, I'm not kidding. Like, I was looking at Julian, my partner, and we would look at each other and be like, okay, and now he's going to fall into the snake pit. Falls into the snake pit. And then there's all these snakes. Wow, there's all these snakes. Like, it was just like that. Like, we were calling it before it even happened. So some
Isn't
people
that
like
how
that.
Snake pits usually work, though?
Yeah, but I mean, like, it was like there was no introduction of the snake pit. They were just saying, like, there's this third round. And if you get through this third round, it's like you are officially this warrior and you're either going to live or die. And so we're like thinking of like, what could it be? What could it be? And like, we just pictured that. So it was just that, you know what I mean? Like, it's to the point where you can predict the outcome. I mean, visually, it was nice. Some really great action scenes, definitely. Good martial arts, good choreography. Just terrible acting, though. The storyline was just blah. So, I mean, if you really like action, you really want like a nice background movie. I'm sorry to put it that way. Definitely check it out. I was willing to give it a try and... That's what I'm rating it at, like a 4, kind of a high 5.
Out of 10.
Out of 10, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I never could get into those. I saw the first G.I. Joe movie, and I don't know if I saw the second one, but I don't know. They just did nothing for me. I know Bruce Willis was in one of them, and I was excited when I heard that, but they just don't do anything for me. When I was a kid, I used to play with G.I. Joe. Like, we had like the big G.I. Joe dolls. Like, what were they? They're probably maybe 10 inches tall.
Yeah, some of them had the parachutes.
They were in that 1/6 scale, I think, about like the Hot Toys are.
Yeah, but they, you know what sucked with them? They couldn't play with my Marvel Mego toys because they were so much shorter than Mego toys. Like, G.I. Joe was a giant. But yeah, no, you're right, Fedra. He had a parachute, which was really cool. And I used to like attach G.I. Joe or Action Jackson to the parachute and throw it up in the air and it would open up. And it was so cool until it got stuck in the telephone wires. Then I got screwed.
Wait. Telephones had wires? What?
Yeah, telephones had wires. That's true.
Just for the listeners that may not know what that means.
Above the ground.
And the phone used to have a dial you had to stick your finger in.
Uh-huh. and it was swirly, the swirly kind of chords too, not just the straight chords.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, like there was, yeah, we didn't have cordless at that point.
And then we didn't have like a cordless who's the size of a brick.
Yeah.
We didn't have like the Andy Griffith phone where you had to like rev it up in order to get the operator, but we were close. Anyway. All right, let's get into the news. So this I just read today, and I had mentioned it to you guys that they might be doing a Werewolf by Night TV series on Disney Plus, and they're looking at Anthony Ramos, who was in this movie, In the Heights, which I should probably check out. I think that's on HBO Max. You know, but I know Jack was a big Werewolf by Night fan. I hated it. It's because, really? You know, if I'm going to buy a comic book, I'm sorry, Jack, I'm not going to buy Dracula. I'm not going to buy Werewolf by Night. I'm going to buy the Hulk, Iron Man, Fantastic Four, Spider-Man. Screw those two. You know, those are the worst of the worst. And I'll admit, I'll throw in Shang-Chi in that garbage junk too, because he was mostly Kung Fu. I didn't really consider those characters like superheroes. So why should I like Werewolf by Night, which I never really read?
Well, I mean, I can only go way back in the day where I believe the protagonist was named Jack Russell. Jack Russell. Yeah, I know. So his father, I believe, was cursed by, of all objects, the Darkhold, which is now in Wanda's hands.
Oh, really? So it is related.
It ties in there. Okay. I mean, you know, so anyway, the curse of the werewolf is handed down to Jack when he turns 18. And it's a story sort of like Bruce Banner and the Hulk. He is trying to get rid of this curse, but along the way, they have him running into different monsters. For example, he ran and he fought Dracula in a great little two-part series. He fought the Hunchback, not of Notre Dame, but they called it the Hunchback. You know, but it was the Hunchback of Notre Dame. He fought Frankenstein. You know, they had all sorts of crazy, you know, horror characters in like a superhero kind of environment.
Was he a good werewolf or a bad werewolf?
No, he had no control over what he did when he was a werewolf. But he had a... He eventually hooks up with this witch named Topaz, and she is able to kind of calm him down and kind of keep control, but, you know, he can flip and turn on her at any moment. But one of the great things was it was drawn by an old-time horror artist named Mike Ploog, and he just, the way he drew these freaky monsters and everything, it was really good to look at. And as a kid, I ate it up. The closest thing I could compare to Mike Ploog to that you might know, Joe, is like some of the Doctor Strange stuff from the late 60s or early 70s, just off the wall sort of characters and movements and different effects that would happen, you know, whenever magic was released. So I used to like Werewolf by Night. It only lasted 31 issues, but
that's bizarre that they're actually considering giving that a Disney Plus series if it was only 31 issues. Because you're the only one I know who talks about Werewolf by Night.
Well, it was one of those things. He's always been around. Like, he's done guest stars. Moon Knight had his first appearance in Werewolf by Night. So that's one character that you may remember.
Well, is it Werewolf by Night or is it Werewolf by Moon Knight? No, I mean, like
Werewolf by Night.
I know, but does he need the full moon in order to become the werewolf, or does it matter?
No, it's supposed to be the full moon, but, you know, it just seems every time you checked in on him, it was always a full moon, because what fun is a werewolf comic book without the werewolf in it?
Well, yeah, I mean, but that's what I'm saying. No, like where it said werewolf by night, I would think that every night he turns into a werewolf, but through werewolf lore, it's got to be a full moon.
And I mean, they had some other stuff. They start going into it where he met up with another werewolf who was trying to heal himself. You know who also showed up in Werewolf by Night? Tigra. That was one of her first appearances as well.
Tigra,
orange tiger lady in the Avengers normally, wears a little blue bikini.
Oh, those were the days.
Those were the days.
Because not only, and I'm pretty sure most of the Werewolf by Night covers, I saw him taking some damsel into the woods, you know, and now that's like, nope, can't do that. Dracula biting the neck without consent. Nope.
Without consent. Yes, Dracula has to
say do yes, all sorts and of I forms will now. Drink your blood.
What do you think, Fedra? Is that something you'd be interested in?
Actually, yeah, if it's, again, you know, if it's done right, I mean, I think either Jack or you said it, you know, in our discussion earlier that, like, is there going to be blood? Like, is there going to actually be a little bit of gore? I mean, I don't think you have to go over the top, but, you know, when it comes to Disney, you know, they sometimes, most of the time, you know, don't put that. And I feel like with a werewolf, that kind of needs to happen. Like, I'm not saying that there needs to be blood, but, you know, it's a wolf. It's messy, you know, it's got hair. It's, you know, drool, you know. So,
yeah,
yeah, drool. You know, raw. You know, it's kind of weird, but for some reason you guys just reminded me of what I used to read a lot, which was Tales from the Crypt, the actual comics.
Oh, yeah.
And
would be the kind of book Mike Ploog would draw.
Right. I was just wondering, mm-hmm. like, if he was a part of that or not, or if that's the style that you were kind of talking about.
You know, I'm just going to point this out. You guys can't see on video, but Fedra, you look like you're in the witness protection program.
Yeah.
I can only see like the darkness of you.
Sorry.
That's okay. We don't have to see you. We don't have to see you.
It's going to start looking like this,
you know, changing the voice.
What'd you do, Fedra? What did you do?
Had to run, you know, you see, they're after me.
But I mean, recently also they relaunched Werewolf by Night into a limited series, and it's not Jack Russell anymore. It's somebody else, and I haven't gotten a chance to read it yet. So,
does he walk up?
Be the direction upright? They're taking.
Does he walk upright, and does he have pants? And didn't he have like a rope around his pants or something?
No, but he's got his clothes are all ripped up whenever he becomes the werewolf.
Yeah. Well, I'll just say my opinion, I couldn't be less interested in it. I'm just not into something like that. I don't think that monsters really necessarily mix with Marvel superheroes. I wasn't a huge fan of the monster movies. Like, I kind of liked it when Abbott and Costello would meet like the Wolfman and Frankenstein and Dracula. But, they really didn't do much for me. Dracula was boring, like the original movie with Bela Lugosi. Like everybody, like it's like, oh, it's a classic. It's like, have you seen it? You know, because he's barely in it. I don't know. Frankenstein was pretty cool. Anyway, I'm not going to go through all the monster movies. There's nothing I could do about it. If Disney wants to waste their money on something like that, go ahead, because we know they waste money.
Well, that's what I'm surprised about. I think. Well, I'm interested that Disney is doing it on Disney Plus. I think this is one of those characters which would work better on Netflix, like under that Daredevil umbrella.
Well, it's dead. That whole thing is gone.
Yeah, that whole thing is gone. But I mean, Netflix did such a good job with Daredevil, Luke Cage, Jessica Jones. I think it would kind of fit better in there because they can kind of be a little riskier with the violence and up it a little bit.
without going overboard.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah.
Disney Plus, I think, I don't know what we're going to see. I don't think they're going to amp it up with the horror too much, because Disney Plus, there is no parental lock on anything. And I think the rowdiest thing on there is PG-13.
I think there is a parental lock on there.
Is there? I don't know. But
yeah, and I'm pretty sure I read about it that you could put something on there where the kids can't watch a certain movie based on the rating. But I don't have to worry about that. All right, next story. So Marsha Lucas, who is George Lucas's ex-wife, so she came out recently and she criticized the new Star Wars trilogy. And she actually contributed a lot to Star Wars when, you know, Lucas was making the original trilogy. She worked on it. I forget if she worked with special effects or editing or something like that, but I think she might have won an award or an Oscar or something like that. So she's was in the business anyway. So she said that now that Kathleen Kennedy is running Lucasfilm and making movies, it seems to me that Kathleen Kennedy and J.J. Abrams don't have a clue about Star Wars. They just don't get it. And J.J. Abrams is writing these stories. When I saw the movie where they killed Han Solo, I was furious. I was furious that they killed Han Solo. Absolutely, positively, there was no rhyme or reason to it. I thought, you don't get the Jedi story, you don't get the magic of Star Wars. You're getting rid of Han Solo at the end of this, the last one. Well, she's saying the last Jedi, they have Luke disintegrate, they kill off Han Solo, they kill Luke Skywalker, and they don't have Princess Leia anymore. And they're spitting out movies every year. They think it's important to appeal to a woman's audience. So now their main character is this female who's supposed to have Jedi powers, but we don't know how she got the Jedi powers or who she is. It sucks. The storylines are terrible, just terrible, awful. So Fedra, agree or disagree? You know what I'm going to say.
Yeah, I already know where you're going to go. So we're already going to disagree, because I thought when I saw the last movie that at least tying things up made sense to me. Do I think I've felt that the last films were very rushed, like just throwing so much at you all at once. But granted, then that means they'd be probably making 4 or 5 or 6 films. So I get it. They gotta, you know, and not that I'm trying to insult anyone, but we're also much more in a day of age where we want instant gratification. So we also got to keep in mind that we have to, you know, stay focused to the movie, or we're just going to lose track. You know, we're going to just fall asleep. So I know that it's also that, because to me, I felt what I loved about the original Star Wars is that it was very cinematic. You know, maybe my generation or younger, I'm not trying to speak for them, but maybe they would say that those films were slower.
And I've heard a lot of people say that, like kids, they're like, oh, I can't watch that one with Yoda, you know, on Dagobah. It's so boring, you know.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm just trying not to put, you know, anybody into a category or speak for them, but I have heard that where it's just cinematic feel is very slow to people. However, you know, it also gives you that projection of space. It gives you that projection of somewhere in a galaxy far, far away. So you kind of need that, you know, whereas, you know, these newer films to me was like a combination of like metaphysics, space, you know, the overall, you know, fight good and evil, plus a whole bunch of, you know, action-packed special effects. So I don't know about the initiative, because quite honestly, when I saw the older films, I did want more female characters. I really did. I love Leia, but it was just like, all we get is Leia. Like, we got Luke, we got Han Solo, you know, we got Obi-Wan, but like, I mean, maybe you can say, okay, well, you get Padme, but it's like, Padme didn't really fight. I mean, Padme, you know, charmed, you know, Anakin. And that's something, because Anakin went through, you know, we all know. Sorry, I'm ranting because I'm thinking about all of the films at once. But I mean, I liked the kind of perspective of Yoda, and toward the end, just being, you know, giggling when, you know, Luke is now the old man. Luke is now reflecting on his mistakes. You know, Luke is kind of doing full circle of his, you know, transition. I know that you didn't like that, Joe, but I truly did. I really loved where he's just sitting there and he just ascends into space and he's looking at those planets like he did in his youth, you know? I mean, that was I'm telling you, if there's something that I felt that, man. It was like, wow, you went full circle, man. You went from a kid on a planet not knowing what your direction in life would be to becoming a freaking Jedi master, you know. Sorry,
push on the brakes here. I never said I didn't like the way Luke's direction went. I'll get into it.
Really? Okay, because thought you didn't. His death and all that.
Well, there's a lot of things that I agreed with what you said. It definitely, the last one was my biggest problem with Star Wars. I love The Force Awakens. I love Rey. I think it was great that they introduced a female Jedi. I think we needed one. And I thought she was great. You know, it's like when you can get behind a character and you like that character, that's what's important. But in the next movie, my problem was it just seemed like we have to push inclusiveness and we got to introduce all these characters that were never before in the previous trilogy or the prequels. And we definitely have to have more women represented. All the generals, all the leaders were women. Everybody that I would look on the bridge in the resistance, it seemed like they were outnumbering the males basically by a huge percentage. And you know, again, when you look at it, we got, I think I would have been, I'm fine with them introducing female characters, but they have to be good ones. Like, you know, they introduced, like, Rey, I thought was good. Holdo, she had her moments. Rose, no. And then those two girls that were in Rise of Skywalker, I can't even remember their names. One was Carrie Russell, and then the other one was, I don't know what, she was Lando's daughter, apparently. If you're going to introduce characters, just don't put them there because you feel that you need inclusiveness or you need representation. Write something about them. Make us want to like them. You know, don't make them as eye candy. You know, give them a story. Like, look what they did to Captain Phasma. Like, she could have been a great character, but they wasted that character. You know, it's just really bizarre. And they did not have a plan. We've talked about this for a while. You know, this recent trilogy, they were like, we're just going to give this to directors and they're going to come up with their own story. And then let's just cross our fingers that it ends up okay. But they had no idea where the series was going, how it was going to end. And they just basically shot themselves in the foot. And that's why we got the crap that we have right now. I will say that I disagree with her about the whole killing of Han Solo. I thought that was great. I thought that was risky, you know.
Definitely.
It's kind of like, you know, the I am your father kind of moment in the new trilogy. And I was totally okay with that. And
I think it showed a different, you know, approach to it, because I think, you know, that what I found very, you know, complexed and it kind of reminded me of Anakin days with Kylo Ren is his entitlement, you know, his resentment to his master, his resentment to his teachers, you know, all of that. I really loved that portion of it. I just think that, again, with how you were saying they were forcing inclusivity, I think they were also just forcing a relationship between him and Rey, or with, I completely forgot his name.
Finn
and Rey. Like, why did that even have to come about? I just felt like it was just a little sprinkle here and there that really just shouldn't have existed either, in my opinion.
I will still say for me that The Force Awakens is in my top four. It might even be three. I still like that movie. Anyway, I've spoken enough. Jack, what's your opinion on this?
What's my opinion on this? I don't know if he's still with her? George Who? Lucas?
No, he's married to somebody else.
I mean, I remember that she was kind of, how do I put it?
Nasty.
She was kind of his sounding board during the whole first trilogy. That whenever he started to go off the rails a little too much, as George Lucas can, because no one wants to tell him anything except for, you know, his wife, now ex-wife, would be like, hey, no, that doesn't make too much sense. So she did contribute quite a bit to the first trilogy as his sounding board and a little bit of his voice of reason. I don't believe she was around for the prequels, which is why that went a little goofy.
Yeah.
He probably could have, like we've said before, he's surrounded by people who just think he's wonderful and never give him feedback that goes against what he thinks is good. We've talked about before, the sequel trilogy, Force Awakens, I thought was a fun movie. It got us back into the Star Wars frame of mind from the original trilogy. That kind of like, hey, you know what? The prequels are done. Here's some new Star Wars. This feels like Star Wars. So The Force Awakens did a good job with that. And we got Rey, who some people said, oh, she's a little bit of a
Mary Sue.
Mary Sue, who knows everything. But you know what? She was likable.
Yeah.
You know, so, okay, she was a little bit of a Mary Sue, but you know what? She was a likable character. And she's a good character. Then we went to The Last Jedi, which when I first saw it, I was like, yeah, it was good. But, you know, it was different. In repeated viewings, I've gotten to appreciate that movie a lot more because we got to see something new in Star Wars.
Me too.
Yeah. We weren't getting a lot of a rehash from like The Force Awakens is valid point of sort of like a retelling of A New Hope. But in The Last Jedi, we got a lot of new stuff that was interesting. Yes, we saw Luke Skywalker, a totally different version that we would have thought. But this is Luke Skywalker after he has put his heart and soul into trying to recreate the Jedi Order and it came crashing down. So he's disillusioned and he's gone into seclusion, just like Yoda went into seclusion. You know, leave me alone. I'm going to contemplate everything on my own. I'm done. So that's the Luke Skywalker we saw. But still, I love that scene where he goes to get rid of the ancient Jedi books, you know, and he can't quite do it. And Yoda sets the tree on fire. You know, he's like, the ancient texts. And Yoda's like, did you read them? And you see Luke Skywalker, the typical farm boy, like, well, no, but
they're the
ancient texts. You know,
no, he said they you know, they weren't much of a page turner or something like that.
Which I got the impression that he never made it through the ancient texts, you know.
What else has he got to do on that island for 30 years, you know? There weren't that many books.
I don't know, but...
I'm not
a Jedi Master. You know, he could go off in astral form and look around and stuff. I don't know. But we got to see a different Luke Skywalker. And one thing that I loved about The Last Jedi was that every time somebody said they weren't going to do something, that's exactly what they ended up doing. You know, like Rey is like, what? Is the Force just used for moving rocks? And then later on, what saves the day? Her using the Force to move rocks. Luke Skywalker coming out and saying, what do you expect me to do? Stand in front of the whole army of the First Order with a laser sword? That's exactly what he ends up doing. I mean, it's just so funny how everything is kind of comes to pass. It did have some problems. We've talked about that before, the whole Rose Canto Bites thing. And we've also talked about how, you know, a lot of people don't like Rose. And I think, and we've talked about it before, I think if she had died at the end of The Last Jedi,
yeah,
people would remember her more fondly. If she had that line where she's, where it was, we won't win this war by fighting what we hate, but it's protecting what we love. And, you know, that was her ending line as she breathes her last breath. I think people would have a totally different opinion of Rose Tika.
Yeah, like if her and Awkwafina died at the same time, would have been awesome.
Oh, no. Don't. I'll get to that. That later. You're baiting me, Hogarty.
Yep.
You're not going to start me off on that. But The Last Jedi was good. And I think a huge problem with The Rise of Skywalker is J.J. Abrams thought he had to apologize for it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was totally uncalled for, because The Last Jedi added a lot of importance canon to what The Rise of Skywalker could have become. And the fact that he had apologized so much for Rian Johnson, which, as I said, was not necessary, hurt The Rise of Skywalker.
It did. No, you're 100% right. And I find it insulting, too, that J.J. Abrams came out and said that it was always the plan to bring the Emperor back even before The Force Awakens. Baloney.
Nope. Yeah, I don't think so. That was thrown in there. But, oh, jeez, you threw me off there, Joey.
Interrupted. Sorry.
You threw me off completely.
Well, now you know how I feel.
I never do that to you. But let's see, where was I going with this?
Old man syndrome.
Jeez, you threw me. Yeah, rotten, you kid, yeah.
No, you said apology tour.
I know what I was going to go on. Fedra touched on it. How you said they were sort of forcing relationships. I always thought that the Finn and Rey relationship made sense, because Finn, as I've said before, Finn was never in it for fighting the First Order. Finn was in it all for the girl all along. Because if you look at it, you know, here it is. He wakes up. What's his first words? Where's Rey? Not like,
oh, that was annoying.
What happened? No, I don't think it was annoying. I think that was his motivation to go and enter the fight.
But that's why he's not a likable character, because
I liked Finn.
No, I liked him in The Force Awakens, but when his whole desire is just Rey and he's not out to save the resistance, you know,
it's not his whole desire, but that was the hook that got him in. Just like the little hologram of Leia was the hook that got Luke Skywalker pulled into the rebellion. That's the hook. Did he grow into the role of a rebel? Yes, he did. But, you know, unfortunately, they decided, you know what, Finn, you're going to be out of luck here. She's going over with this broody dark guy, you know.
Finn became...
And that was the part I thought was forced.
Finn became, you know, the girl with the pigtails and the glasses and the braces that always liked the football player in high school, and he couldn't give a damn about her. That's who he became in that series after a while. And I think it was a sin.
I think, you know, that's a little harsh, but
no, it's a little true. I mean, he basically was just pining over her for the next two movies, and he just never came out as himself. Like, he could have been a heroic leader. Again, he could have sacrificed himself in The Last Jedi, and that would have been awesome. Yeah, that would have been great.
Rose got it. Rose took him out of the hole.
And then Kathleen Kennedy came running down. It's like, you mean to tell me that you're going to kill the first black man in Star Wars and the first Asian girl in Star Wars? No, they both survive. but they crash into each other and they crash into the the portable Death Star. I don't care.
Like I said, if Rose bought it, we'd remember her a lot fonder. That was her big dramatic moment, because God knows she didn't get it in Canto Bight, you know? So, you know, and the same thing, like you said, Phasma, I think Phasma had Boba Fett syndrome. They made a character, made her look cool, but there really wasn't much to her aside from the fact that she had a cool looking set of armor.
She was basically made, unfortunately, for the second movie, just for Finn to kill, to have something to do. And again, it's kind of sad, because I think that she could have been a really good villain.
And she could have been. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Just wasted her. All right. Let's move on. Actually, last story. Very good. So Seth Green, who he does that Robot Chicken.
Yeah.
And he's actually the voice of Howard the Duck in these Marvel What If stuff.
He's
and
a voice on Family Guy. He's all over the place.
Yeah, he's not very good as Howard the Duck. I don't like him at all. To me, it doesn't seem like that's how Howard the Duck should sound. But anyway, he said that he had heard about Guardians 3. He's not sure if he's going to be in it. He might be in it. But he says one thing that he does know is that it's a girl story. It's the sister story between Gamora and Nebula. And I know Fedra and I kind of had a little back and forth with this. So I'll let you go first, Fedra. Round one, Fedra, Ekris.
I don't even remember what I said.
It's fine. And I win. Joe there wins again.
Joe wins again. I mean, you know, I'm open to seeing what they'll do. I mean, is it going to be, you know, again about their childhood, or did it say like they're starting from like?
Well, he doesn't really know, but I guess he just heard, you know, that it's going to be mostly focusing on that.
Okay.
Well, my point is, I just think that we don't need that. I'm going to go real quick, you know, because we saw that in Endgame, we saw that in Guardians 2. We don't need to see their relationship explored even further. I would rather see, you know, Star-Lord having to deal with the loss of Gamora, or having to deal with the new Gamora, who is the not the one who fell in love with Star-Lord.
But the one who pulled a knife on him when he tried to dance with her.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of open to see what they would do. I don't see a full movie in it. Like, I would want to see more of the dynamics of, like, the whole gang with Rocket and Thor and Star-Lord together. Like, that's the kind of what I'm looking forward to, is just to see how that plays out. Because I thought their chemistry was great.
No, I agree 100%. They have great chemistry.
But again, I just don't want it so cheesy. Like, I even feel like sometimes in Guardians of the Galaxy 2 that even, you know, that relationship was a little cheesy to me. So I think it depends on how they're going to play out this relationship. Are they going to show, you know, that kind of hardship that they had as, you know, with Thanos, or are they going to be more in the present? And that's where I kind of have not a lot of comment to say, because it's like, well, I mean, if they get creative, which route are they going to go? Like, what are they going to actually say or tell, you know?
Well, I guess from just the little that he said and what we saw at the end of Endgame, I would assume that they probably do find this, you know, Gamora 2.0, and she's trying to bond with her, realizing that they had a better relationship. Although Gamora 2.0 is used to them with the bickering rivalry that they had when they were under Thanos, and that, you know, she's trying to fill the void that is now gone, now that the Gamora that she really cared about is gone. That's where, just from the little that he had said, I think that they might be doing, but I just hope that that's not the main focus of the movie. You know, I hope it's not like a Star Trek The Voyage Home, you know, like where they're trying to get Spock to remember who he is, you know, and I hope they don't do that with Gamora throughout the whole movie, like where Star-Lord is like, we used to dance, you know, Footloose and all this stuff. And it's, I just wish it's something good. And I'm sure it will, because James Gunn, he is pretty good at what he does. And maybe Seth Green's full of crap and he doesn't know what he's talking about. Anyway, sorry.
I don't know. I think Guardians 3 is going to deal with a couple of things. I think that's going to be a plot in it, but not the main plot. I think we're going to see another one of these movies where there's different things happening at all times, and somehow it's going to collide all together. Because I do think we're going to see Adam Warlock.
Yeah.
Hatch from the Cocoon. I do think we're going to see the original Guardians again, since, you know, the end credit was getting them getting the band back together again for another heist or something. And the Nebula Gamora thing, I think we're going to see somehow those three different stories are going to collide at some point. How they're going to do it, I don't know. James Gunn is very good at that. So I think we're going to, see a fun movie. I don't know if he's going to get everybody back. I don't know if he's going to get Stallone, Michelle Yeoh, and who, and Vin Rhames. I think he was Charlie X.
Charlie X? Wasn't Charlie X in Star Trek?
Charlie X was also one of the Guardians, I think. The original Guardians.
Oh, I know you're talking about. He was
the big guy with the harness on. But yeah, I think...
They won't have problems getting those people back.
Yeah, they might come back just for the heck of it, just for the fun, because that's what those old action stars do. They'll come back just for the heck of it. So I think that's what we're going to see. I can't see that being the whole focus of the movie. Didn't we see that once before in like Frozen?
Yeah, that's true. Well, I guess you know what? I'm going to do everybody a favor and just end it here, you know, about this topic, because I can go on and on about it. And we got a lot to discuss. So we'll just end the news here. Good news all around. Let's get into what I've been dying to hear, because Jack really hasn't said boo about Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. He hasn't said anything. So this will be Fedra and me? Anyway, whatever, proper English. This is going to be our first words out of Jack's mouth regarding it. And I'm just curious if he thinks it's a masterpiece or if it's a crap piece. So
can I fall somewhere in between?
Yeah, you can do that too. All right. Jack.
Okay.
What were your thoughts?
Well, they have dried out the movie theater from the after effects of Ida. So I got to see Shang-Chi and the Legends of the Ten Rings. And while I would give this movie a enthusiastic thumbs up, it does have its problems. That's my critic's voice.
No, that's good. No, that's what I want to hear.
Okay. What I liked about it, I like Shang-Chi. This movie, it was Marvel does a kung fu movie. However, this is not Bruce Lee. This is much more Jackie Chan.
Yeah.
Where Bruce Lee's on the ground fighting and everything. Jackie Chan was the one fighting while he's flipping off the roof and falling down onto, you know, the road and the cars and doing all sorts of crazy stuff. This is definitely Marvel does Jackie Chan. Had a lot of fun little throwbacks in there. I was scratching my head a lot, though. First off, we'll go with the Ten Rings. I know they were not like the Ten Rings in the comics. If they did, it would have probably made for a more interesting villain, because the Mandarin in the comics, each of those rings has a different power that he can use to do all sorts of incredible stuff, which is why he's such a good villain in the comics. But in this, the Ten Rings seem sort of like, you know,
Slinkies.
Imaginary fist going out from the hand and, you know, spinning around and hitting people. Yeah, if you had the choice, you would rather have the Mandarin's Ten Rings from the comics versus what they showed the Ten Rings to be in this movie. Also, as a crime lord, as a villain, if he had the comics rings, he would have made much more sense as this huge crime villain, because, you know, he could hypnotize people. He could do just so many different things. With this, it was kind of like the Ten Rings were like the one, he had one weapon and that's what he would use. It didn't seem to do all that much that was any different than, say, he had his own version of Thor's hammer. He could hit things. You know, he could fly. You know, you kind of want to see something a little new. However, I thought Tony Leung did a good job as him, because I think he has the presence to be the Mandarin. He has that sort of coldness at times, and he still has emotion that sometimes cracks through, but he is a good Mandarin. Unfortunately, he's, as Marvel normally does, it keeps killing its villains just as they start getting interesting. So that's the Ten Rings side of it. Shang-Chi, I liked how his story was. He had left the family, went out on his own, and kind of stayed under the radar. So I liked that aspect of him, because, you know, he knew what was going on and he didn't want to be part of it. But of course, he got sucked back in. I thought the guy who played Shang-Chi, I thought he was very good. I liked how they had him move and fight and all sorts of things. Like, he wasn't always, you know, the best guy in the room, that nobody could ever touch him. No, he got hit at times. He hit back a heck of a lot more, but he wasn't perfect, you know, in the fight. He was a skilled fighter, but he wasn't so incredibly over the top that nobody could touch him. So I thought he was very good. Michelle Yeoh, I think she's terrific. I've always liked Michelle Yeoh, and just her being in the movie would have given it an extra point for me in the rating scale. She just brings that classy presence to something.
No battery.
Okay. Let me turn that off there. Okay. So that was good. The cringeworthy part of the movie was Awkwafina. I don't know why she was there, aside from maybe they wanted an everyman character. However, I don't like her. I don't find her as a likable person. I don't like her show on Comedy Central. I don't like seeing her in other movies like Crazy Rich Asians. And this did absolutely nothing to change my mind on her. I just do not like her. She has made comments publicly that if you want to say, you want to throw out the word racist, it actually kind of fits, kind of. Just because she's Asian doesn't mean she can't be racist. I find her that those comments are very annoying, and I think she should be canceled just like Gina Carano was. So I just don't like her. And her being there, every scene she was in kind of just bothered me. And like, even at the end where she gets the one shot, you know, she never shot a bow and arrow in her life. And after, what was it, 2 days they were in the village?
Yeah.
Before the Mandarin got there. Now she's making shots like Hawkeye.
Like, yeah, that's true. I wanted to step in, and Fedra, you could step in too, you know, if you want to ask Jack something. I will say, I think that the reason why they brought Awkwafina in, and I said this in when we had a round table, I was expecting her to be a lot worse. I didn't think she was that bad. I still don't like her. I agree with you. I think she's a nasty person. And for some reason, Disney keeps kissing her butt, you know, and putting her in a movie. She's going to play Scuttle in the Little Mermaid live action. She was the dragon in Raya and the Dragon, and she was horrible in that.
The outcry for her?
Because they're on the right political side, as she is. That's probably what it is. But my point is, I didn't think she was that bad, though. I mean, you know, I don't care. I don't like when actors say what their politics are, but if they're a good actor, I'm fine with it. And I think that she did an okay job as the character. But I think the reason why she was put in this movie, and this is my opinion, Jack, I thought that the guy that played Shang-Chi was boring and he was very wooden in his performance. And they're like, well, we need somebody for him to play off of. And she's got a pretty good way of, you know, being comical, and she's loud, and she would balance him out. And I think that's why she was put in there.
I think they could have gotten any Asian actress to fill that role. I don't think she brought much to it. But that's, like I said, that's just me. Somebody must like her because they keep giving her work.
And you know, like when she, that thing with the arrow, I was telling someone recently, I would have appreciated so much more if, you know, she was with the guy that trained her and she shoots that arrow and it ends up hitting him in the shoulder. It just to show like, yeah, no matter what, she's still Awkwafina. And I think that would have been a funny moment.
Or even if she does make the shot, have everyone around her like stop and look at her like, where the hell did that come from? You know, and have her shrug. You know, you're playing off the point I'm just making, like, how the heck did she make that shot? If everybody else like lowered their, you know, all the other archers were standing next to her, lowered their arrows and just like stared at her.
Like look at how far that dragon was. That must have been a mile in the sky.
You know? I'm telling you, this is... Anyway, going on. I had enough about Awkwafina and her bit. I like the development they did with the Mandarin. I actually did kind of like the point where, you know, he met his wife, you know, that he thought he was so big and tough and everything, and she kicked his butt, you know. And then he gives up the ring to start a life with the rings to start a life with her. Tragedy happens, you know, and he takes the rings back and he starts going to town for revenge. I like that as a motivation on him. I thought that was good character building. Like I said, it's just too bad. Marvel, when they start getting these great villains, they kill them. And then when they have terrible villains, they keep them around. Like we saw the Abomination show up. The Abomination was not a look that I really cared for when he showed up previously in the Hulk movie. I do like that they made him a little bit closer to the comic with the fin ears and stuff and have him being a buddy with Wong. I liked seeing Wong again. However, I just don't get that whole Fight Club thing, but
yeah,
you know, I did like the fact that, you know, he's like, oh, at the end of the movie, he's like, oh yeah, my sister, she's there, she's dismantling it and everything. And she goes back and she's, you know, just taking charge. I hope we see her come back in some capacity like that, because it looks like, as far as the Netflix series, it looks like Marvel has wrapped up the whole point of the ninja clan called the Hand. And it would be good to see the Ten Rings take the place that the Hand no longer has of your, you know, sneaky martial arts ninja type people. So hopefully we see more of them. I don't know where they'll fit into the whole scheme of the MCU, but I think they could be a good villain to have around in the background, and who knows what they'll be up to. So there was a lot to like in Shang-Chi. But there were some things I just did not. So that's my review. So overall, I would give Shang-Chi, I would give it about a 7. I did love the last fight scene with the soul sucker creature and the dragon, and they're doing all this stuff up until the Hawkeye shot. And then it was kind of
A 7 is like a 2 for us with Jack.
No, I'm usually a little harsher. I've given lower scores.
Do you like have anything? Said,
there was enough in it I liked to give it a 7. I would not go higher than that.
Do you have anything you want to add?
And
what?
They're telling this crazy story. Wong shows up because, you know, the Ten Rings have triggered all sorts of magical alarms going off. And he's like, I get that he brings Shang-Chi. Why is he bringing the other one?
Yeah, that annoyed the hell out of me.
Oh, wait. Are you now part of, you know, the Avengers group? Because you shot an arrow accurately once that you should not have been able to do. Like, no, I hope she's not around for much of Phase 4.
You know she will be.
Unfortunately, she probably will, but maybe she'll... Maybe the gods of Marvel will shine down and write her out of existence. I don't know.
I'm sure she'll pop her head through a portal for Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness and go, hey, guys, what's up? You know, Frederick, do you have anything you want to
ask? She's horrible. Stop giving her work. Jeez Louise.
Just Jack, what did you think of the writing of the secret land and then the whole soul sucker? Did you like that, or
that was a very, I liked it. It's a little bit of a trope of, you know, like he's behind the door. Actually, when he was hearing the voices and it became apparent that was it, I was thinking it was Mephisto. I thought they were going to, you know,
that'd been cool. Yeah.
They were going to do that, and like Mephisto can appear as whatever he wants.
Is he,
so maybe we would have seen like what was his name in Samurai Jack? Mephisto appear like that, you know, and he's released, and then he causes havoc all over the place. So that's kind of what I was expecting on the other side of the door to eventually come out, but you know, that whole thing of here's this guardian city and they're protecting the great seal and stuff. That's kind of comic tropey, but it works. Yeah, that doesn't bother me. I like it. If you read comics long enough, you know all the tropes. And the reason you keep reading comics is because you like those.
See, my issue with... part of my issue with this movie is, again, like how they kind of pandered a little bit to where we're seeing this a lot, like in What If and some of the Disney Plus series, where they almost don't want to push that there's a villain. And that's why the Mandarin redeemed himself at the end and he sacrificed himself for his son. I would have rather him still stayed bad and for him to live so that he could be a nemesis, you know, for the MCU. Like you said, don't kill off the villains. Maybe he could have done something like when this, you know, when Shang-Chi is leaving, he's like, that's my boy, you know, like kind of like a wink or something like that, or, you know, but still be a jerk. I think that's whole, that Disney's, I hate constantly using this word, their woke ideology is that they didn't want to make anybody in this movie look bad. And since it was most of the characters were of Asian descent, you know, and that's why they didn't want to create villains. That's why everybody had their own moments to shine. But I think that also, it could have been a better story if they took more risks, I think. I do think that the sister might be the new villain. I think that'd be cool, you know, if she takes charge and she comes back for the next movie, kills Awkwafina in the first 2 minutes of the movie. But we know that's not going to happen. She's going to be around for a long time, my friend.
Yeah, I know.
And she'll probably be in Star Wars not too long from now.
Eventually. And then Indiana Jones. I hear she's going to be new Short Round or something.
Oh, that's bad.
But, I even made Fedra just shake her head like, no. But, your point, though, it probably would have worked if the Mandarin did manage to get away. And the point of the next, if there's another Shang-Chi, would be him trying to get the Ten Rings back.
Yeah.
I mean, instead of having, you know, the daughter take over, because let's see, now we've got Sharon Carter is the power broker. And now we've got, I don't remember the daughter's name, the sister's name. Now she's the head of the Ten Rings. It's sort of like, okay, you know, we've got it that, you know, the hot chick is the crime lord now, you know, bit. So I don't know. Like I said, I wish they kept Tony Leung around. He was a good villain. Like when he went in and he took out the Iron Gang, when he went and got revenge for his wife's murder, you know, you saw him as the cold-blooded killer, and he was good. I wish he was still around, that he could be the MCU Mandarin. But
and I will say, you know, the one thing that I really loved when I first started watching this movie was for the first 10 to 15 minutes, they were speaking all in either Cantonese or Mandarin, and there were subtitles. I was like, bravo, Disney. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The only one that doesn't speak Asian or Cantonese or Mandarin is Awkwafina for some reason, because she's too Americanized. Anyway, well, I'm kind of glad you liked it, Jack.
Like I said, I liked most of it. However, being at a 7 rating, I have to say this is not a movie that I would purchase on Blu-ray.
Well, it's actually coming out November 12th on Disney Plus. So
right. It's something that I might watch on Disney Plus, but I wouldn't. This is not one I would buy.
I will watch it again, you know, just give it a second chance, see if my view changes, but that's good.
But yeah, that's my scale, Fedra. Would I buy it? And I would not buy this one.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't buy Black Widow either.
Black Widow I would buy, and I believe it is coming out soon on Blu-ray.
Yeah, it might be out already, 4K or Blu-ray or whatever. I wouldn't. I've never bought the Ant-Man movies. I would not buy this one. I would not buy Black Widow. It's just some movies. And I didn't buy Captain Marvel. Part of it was because I just didn't like, they changed the character too much for me.
Same thing. I didn't buy Captain Marvel either.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into what if, so we could bring Fedra more into this, and then I'll give my little thing about Star Wars Visions, and then we'll call it a night.
You should be impressed. I actually watched a couple of those things too.
What's that?
I actually watched some of the Star Wars stuff.
Oh, you did? Oh, that's impressive. Mm. Impressive. Most impressive.
Yes, unfortunately, I was not impressed. But let's go to what if.
All right, let's get to what if.
We always love. Let's talk about what if. Fedra,
let's get to what if. And it was called What If Thor Were an Only Child. Like Jack says, Fedra, you're up. Fedra?
Swing, bada, 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 swing.
Oh, yeah. First off, I did not like this episode.
Not alone.
It was very comical, like too comical. This is an episode that definitely goes back to what we've kind of said for every episode, which is this writing for adults or is this being written for like kids in mind? 'Cause there were a lot of things that were very adults, but the overall like theme, like, I don't know. I was just rolling my eyes a lot through it. It was just very candid and just, I don't know. Let me tell you what I liked about it first, because I always like to go with the positive. So what I did like and really love is that all the voices were there of everybody from each character. I loved kind of seeing everybody, you know, from Fury to Darcy to Jane to Thor to Captain Marvel, you know, Rocket, you know, falling asleep in a sink in a hotel room. You know, it was just that kind of, you know, that I really loved. I love three moments with Loki, which I didn't think, because when I've seen the Marvel movies, I just get annoyed and just want to shake Loki, you know. So in this episode, I actually really liked him. The scenes that I liked was when he was like wishing on a star that Thor was having him wish, but it was actually Captain Marvel coming. And then I loved when he's on the phone with Jane. And he's trying to like ask for like, you know, a sister or a friend, you know, and Thor is just like, hey, buddy, come over here and have some dumplings. I thought that was great. I love that. And last but not least, because I do have to say this because I lived in St. Louis for 3 years. I freaking love that they tried to take the St. Louis Arch and make it into a slingshot. That was pretty dope. I was laughing. And then when they put it back in mint condition, I was like, damn right. So I thought that was pretty cool and a nice homage to St. Louis, Missouri. So if there's any listeners in Missouri, you know, that's the show me state. So those are the things that I did love. Now let's go to kind of what I don't like, which is a little bit longer. So I just don't like this theme with Thor, and you guys are probably going to say it too, but it's important that I say it as the female here, that I just didn't like this whole, you know, play of him becoming a very spoiled, narcissistic, you know, egotistical person, you know, from the beginning. And then this kind of, you know, painting of him as weak. I really didn't like it. I've never really seen Thor that way. And it's, you know, I know that they're trying to portray this episode that if he didn't have Loki in his life and if he didn't have the experiences of Loki, then he would be different. And yes, you can have that kind of debate of nature, you know, versus nurture. I just didn't like it at all, though. It just felt very odd. I don't like it when, you know, Marvel is like one-upping him on everything. And then the fact that he's like afraid of his mom and like his mom kind of demeans him in the way in the episode of him not being as smart or trying to get away with something or lie to her. Or, you know, it just didn't feel right. Also, that kind of little relationship between Duck Howard and Darcy, I thought that was really weird. They kind of hook up in Vegas. And then I also thought that, you know, toward the end, when Thor is literally battling, you know, Marvel. That's the only scene that I actually liked of Marvel in the entire thing. I like the fact that he was, you know, projecting, you know, thunder at her, and she's just like calmly just like, okay, this is fine. You realize, you know, nothing's happening to me. Like, I liked that bit. But I didn't like that they were kind of showing Thor as clumsy and not really a good fighter. Like, that didn't make sense to me at all. It was like, where is this coming from? And I just didn't like Marvel's attitude throughout the whole thing. It was just very negative, where I think they should have showed more sides to her, more emotion to her, and they just didn't. So I just thought overall it was just a very cliche teenage kind of vibe. And although, yes, you could say it was creative, to me, it just made me look at all the characters in a negative way. Like, I don't know.
No, you practically said everything that I would like to say. And more, which was pretty good. You made a lot of good points.
Sorry, no, go ahead.
Oh no! I was complimenting you. You made really good points, and I'm like you said, as the female member of our group. I mean, I'm glad you said a lot of things you said.
It upset me, like, you know, because I don't know, like, as someone who really likes to. I constantly love, I'm a deep thinker. Maybe sometimes I think too much because I love and enjoy to write. But what a writer does is you write from what you know and how you create. And when you create characters, you sometimes put, you know, little truths here and there. And I don't know what these writers are trying to project. You know, I can only just see from this. And I just, you know, the fact that they're making, you know, Thor's mom, you know, in this light, you know, kind of putting him down in that aspect at the end, you know, like, oh, Marvel, you know, thank you for educating him. It's like, I was just shaking my head, like,
yeah,
you know, and again, you know, with Marvel's behavior and then showing, I can't remember that character from S.H.I.E.L.D. you know, just, I mean, maybe that's typical government vibe, like, hey, if she can't blow him up, we'll blow him up. It's like, wow, okay, there's no diplomacy at all, you know. So I guess I should stop. I'll comment, no, I guess, good. Later.
All right, Jack.
I agree with nearly everything Fedra said. I think I figured out why I'm having problems with What If. It seems to be written by a freshman in high school trying to impress the other freshman of like, hey, let's just do this dopey sort of thing. Thor is a spoiled child would have been what we saw at the beginning of the first Thor movie. Impulsive, rational, not holding back on anything. And that's what we would have seen. Not frat boy Thor, not even frat boy Thor, high school Thor, you know, running around causing parties. And why? Why would just the Asgardian showing up create this atmosphere that you have, you know, alien races, frost giants, all coming to a planet for party? That it's not like they release a pheromone or something that brings this out in people. You know, this is the episode just, it's par for course. I don't know. I don't think this is being written for anyone over the age of 10. Even though it's dark, it's just not written for adults. It really isn't. And it's unfortunate because you can tell a story without dumbing it down. The fact that Thor
gets so afraid because his mom's coming home to him having a party. Like, come on, really, really? Come on, come on. This is not Thor. And then all the gags coming in of, you know, Nebula showing up, being drunk, Rocket asleep in the sink from drinking too much, you know, them having a hotel room, you know, and trashing it. Where you're right. They didn't do anyone any favors in this. Even Jane Foster, they turned into an idiot.
That's right. She was kind of an idiot.
You know, I mean, it was just the only thing I thought was cool in this was the battle between Captain Marvel and Thor, because you have two powerhouses and they didn't hold back. They showed these guys using their powers against each other. I love the gag of them knocking each other into orbit and landing someplace else. I thought that was very funny how they did it. But I mean, you got a sense that, you know, Captain Marvel is tough, you know, and yeah, Thor can hit her and knock her off balance, but she can take it. She can throw down with the big guys like Thor. And that was the only part I liked. That ending was just, I was watching it. I'm like, I can't believe Joe Hogarty makes me watch stuff like this. Because, you know, he was like, oh, you have to watch it. People want to know. Well, I mean, the whole scene of Frigga showing up and Thor's there with a book and everybody's sitting down and he's like, oh, hello, mother. You're interrupting my class. Like, I'm like, what? I don't want Joe to have to edit an R2-D2 screen in there.
Thank
but
you.
Once again, this is another episode of rubbish. Rubbish, I say. Good day, Mr. Hogarty.
Well, you know, good day. You know what sucks is Thor was so good for me. Chris Hemsworth was, he was great as Thor in the first Thor movie. He was great as Thor in the first Avengers movie. And then in Endgame, he was amazing. And it's just every now and then they make him look like a doofus or that he's not as cool of a character as, like, just when he becomes like one of the coolest damn characters in the MCU, they're like, we got to pull him back for some reason. We have to make him look like a buffoon. And like Fedra, and I think Jack had said this too, like, who is writing this stuff? I'll tell you who's writing this stuff. And I've said it before. It's woke writers are writing this, because if you look at it, let's look at the first episode. You had Captain Carter. She's better than Steve Rogers, Peggy Carter. Next one was T'Challa being Star-Lord. He is way better than Peter Quill. And then you had Hank Pym become the bad guy in the third one. And then I guess it was the zombie one, which I don't know what the hell was going on there. And then you had Killmonger. You know, he was a bad guy, but he was the smartest guy in the room, except for Pepper and Shuri. And Tony Stark was an idiot. And in this one, who's the idiot? It's Thor and basically every male in existence on that planet. And the only ones that have rational thinking are Maria Hill, Captain Marvel, and Jack has a point. You know, I don't know where Jane Foster, where her head was. At times, you know, she kind of saw the light, but then at other times, she just was looking to hook up with Thor. But yeah, no, I think this is an embarrassment. I think, again, that they're pushing this crazy agenda that, if we're going to have a villain or we're going to have somebody look stupid, let's go with the white male superheroes, because, you know, we can't go with any female heroes or villains or people of color and all that. And it's just so obvious, but they don't have to do that. And that's where it's like, I feel like it's not a quality, because if it is a quality, they take shots at everybody, you know, like that. T'Challa isn't the most perfect person on Earth. They could have showed that he had some problems, you know, at dealing with things and that he made mistakes, but no, they had to make him perfect. They had to make Peggy Carter perfect. It's just getting nauseating. And it's almost like, in a way, yeah, a kid is writing the script. It's almost like we have to correct the sins of the past where the white male superheroes were dominant. And we have to make it look like the new heroes like Captain Marvel and Captain Carter are way better than anything that the males were in the past. And Captain Marvel, and I'm not going to use the R2-D2 scream, but yeah, like I would say throughout this episode, she's a B, rhymes with witch. And that's my problem with Captain Marvel in the MCU is it seems like she's always like that. I know Brie Larson is not a happy person and that she doesn't think that Captain Marvel is for boys, especially white males or white dudes that she said. But she seems like she resents those characters on the screen in a What If. And she had this scowl that she kept looking at Thor. Like she just couldn't stand to look at him. And it just annoys the hell out of me that Fedra uses this word a lot. It's forced. It's like they're trying to preach to us that this is the way things should be. And
for me, there was one part in this episode that was super triggering as, you know, a woman. Like that, yeah, I will, like, I'll admit to that because I've heard it throughout my whole life. it's when, you know, Marvel comes into the situation and he's calling her a party pooper, and then he tells her to lighten up and smile. I can't tell you how many times in my life a man has like said, well, what's the matter? You should smile. Like, yeah, that pissed me off right there. But I agree with you though that she doesn't need to have this like serious, constant, dominant attitude in everything. Because again, like I'm saying, you gotta look at the other perspective if you're gonna have balance. Because if that's what you're gonna convey, then you're saying that every single woman on this planet, every single little girl should behave that way. And that's not right either. You have to have a balance. Just like I truly believe that men have a lot of emotional issues because they've been programmed to not cry, not express any other emotion except for, yeah, maybe fear or anger or seriousness. Because I've seen where men is projected as weak if they show any other kinds of emotion, which really, this is my opinion again, but this is what I've seen in films in reality. And like, so they're doing this same thing with Marvel and making her just so, not even stoic, they're just making her just pissed all the time. And that's what I had a problem in this, of making her all powerful and like all knowing. And it's like, no, you're setting up for a perfect way to fail when you make this kind of idealism onto the character.
Well, I would say Captain Marvel is kind of like the equivalent of Superman in DC because she's super powerful. But would Superman act like the way that Captain Marvel is acting? Like almost like constantly saying, I can kick your ass. I just want you to know that, you know, I'm the most powerful superhero in the world. He doesn't do that. He's humble. That's what she's lacking, humility. Hmm. And I just don't think that they're handling the character right. And I'm not a fan of Brie Larson and the words that she says, but I still think that she's a good Captain Marvel. I just wish that she was written better. And maybe they will, but I would seriously doubt it. I don't think it's going to happen, especially if we're watching this crap on What If. But when you mentioned party pooper, so Thor coming from Asgard, would Thor know the word party pooper? Would he know the word boomerang? That's what always annoys the hell out of me, is that, you know, these writers, why are you giving him Earth slang? He wouldn't be knowing all this stuff. And that's why, again, I don't know who's in charge of hiring the writers, who the writers are, but they suck. And it just annoys the hell out of me that they're getting paid to write this crap and that there's going to be a season two and that they're never going to do anything to make it better. Because they're like, basically, well, people accept the crap. You know, we get the same amount of ratings. Just give me my check and I'll write more crap.
Well, to what Jack said, too, about Jane, like how they just made her so aloof throughout the whole thing. I mean, I was even, you know, upset at the end because it shows you, again, the exact opposite that, you know, Thor tells her like, oh, you know, you shouldn't have called me out, but you did. And I guess you care about me and I like you. And it's like she just forgives him and goes on a date.
That's weird.
It's like so you can be like a complete jerk and like invade Earth and make this whole party, and then the only reason why you shape up is because you're afraid of your mom. Then you apologize and you get to get the girl. Like,
all right,
is that, you know?
All right, we got to do another. I have to stop because I have to get rid of the asshole thing.
Sorry.
And we're back. I can see this like visually, like when I'm editing, so I'll know when to erase it. Yeah, you know, it is just so bizarre. Also, Darcy. I can't stand Darcy. Why don't they just get rid of her? You know, she was in WandaVision. I think we're never going to get rid of her, unfortunately.
Now, I like Darcy. I think she's
annoying. Her voice is annoying.
I think she's funny. I think she's supposed to be that wacky, annoying friend. And Kat Dennings pulls it off. She's the
non-Asian Aquafina.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. I was thinking, is that what, you know, Aquafina is in Shang-Chi?
But, you know, that she said, well, why don't we just blow him up over North Dakota? No one would miss North Dakota. I'm like, is that a political statement? Like, because it's a red state and all that. And I wouldn't be surprised if that was something like that. It's like, well, it's a red state. We'll just get rid of it. No one's going to miss it.
Wow, that's a great point.
Yeah,
I didn't know that about the state, but yeah, to say that, like, who's gonna miss it? You know, oh, I got them confused. It's like, wow.
Well, they could.
You don't, not to pick on North Dakota, but you don't run across people from the Dakotas that often.
Well, that's true, but in still,
fact, you want to hear a funny story, or how are we in time?
No, we'll save it for next week. Sorry.
Okay, never mind.
But let me ask you a question, Jack. So after all of the shenanigans that Thor did, is he still worthy to hold Mjolnir?
I would not think so, but
that's, again, the writers just don't get it.
When it's written by a 13-year-old, probably, yeah, you know, he's cool. He's worthy. By a reasonable adult, no.
And I agree with both of you. No way in hell would Thor be so terrified by his mother. His father, yes. His mother, no.
He's not even that terrified of his father. I mean, we've heard him talk back to his mother in the first movie. Called him, you're an old man and a fool. You know.
when he pulled the hammer, too, in front of his mom, and it had all that stuff on it. I mean, I was even thinking that, like, you just disrespected the hammer. It's got all this stuff all over it. How are you still able to hold it?
Yeah, it's just really weird. But I will say, I think this was my worst episode. It's easy to say because it's like fresh in your mind. I'd say for the most part, they all kind of sucked. I'd say probably my favorite one was the Doctor Strange one. And maybe the murder mystery one, but that's pushing it for me. Anyway, let's get into our last.
The murder mystery one was the only one I found vaguely interesting in.
Yeah. All right, let's get into Star Wars Visions and then we'll kind of wrap this up. And if you have questions for us, Fedra, you know, you can ask us. So Jack, you watched a little bit of this?
I watched two episodes, The Duel
and the one with the twins.
Okay, so what did you think?
Do not care for them. They are the equivalent of the Star Wars What If.
There oh, you. Yeah, they are.
I mean, you said, oh, there's a couple of good ones. Maybe I just picked two of the bad ones. I don't know. The duel, I didn't like. I didn't like the animation, and I didn't like the story. I didn't like the character design of the Sith. Why the heck does R2-D2 have a bamboo hat that on?
Made no sense.
I didn't care for the duel, and the one with the twins. I just didn't care at all about anything in it. And then when I saw the two Star Destroyers joined with this red thing, I was like, why the heck would you do that? I just did not care for it. And then at the end of that episode, where how the hell did this guy fly that he plants an X-wing nose down in the dirt?
Well, what about you? They're both breathing in space. No, with no problem.
But if you're, that is the worst attempted landing. Even if you didn't know how to land something, you wouldn't say, hey, let me point the nose straight at the ground. You know, like, maybe it's just not for me. I don't know. Maybe I just watched two of the bad episodes. I don't know. Don't make me watch anymore.
I'm a big anime fan, and I was really excited with the prospect of this series. I think a lot of the animation is pretty nice. I think that probably the one that you saw, the twins, wasn't the best animation. And there's even crappier animation. There's 9 episodes. Not all of them are hits. I think that there are 4 good episodes, but I think that the big problem with this series is that you really don't have any returning Star Wars characters. Like, I think it would have been more successful if they did like what they did with Batman Ninja, where they had the characters, like Batman went back into feudal Japan, and you saw the Joker and Bane and the Riddler and all those other Batman villains, Catwoman. And it was interesting, you know, because again, Batman is a very popular character. A lot of people are attuned to him. When you introduce all these new characters that have nothing to do with Star Wars canon, I think a lot of people are going to be bored really quick.
You see, I disagree. It's a great big galaxy, Joe.
No, and it is, but I just think it would be more successful.
Characters. It's just, even if you're making a short film, you gotta care about the characters at least a little.
Well, this is the problem, too, is that they made 9 unrelated episodes. So they were done by 7 studios, I think, and they all have... Everything's inconsistent. Like in the first episode, The Duel, you have this samurai, and he's got a samurai sword that basically the lightsaber is part of the samurai sword. And it's got the hilt jack? That's the handle or the handle? Mm-hmm. It's like a traditional Japanese samurai sword, but you have a lightsaber, and then he puts it in its sheath.
Scabbard.
Yeah. Like it doesn't detract, or, you know, he doesn't have a button to push it. It's just constantly using a kyber crystal, and it's constantly lit. And then in the next episode, you got some guy just pushing the button. It's a regular lightsaber. And it's like that throughout the whole series. There's no consistency. And I think that could be frustrating too. What they should have done is they should have met with these creators. They should have told them their ideas. We have 9 different ideas. Here are ideas. Here are what the characters are going to look like. This is what we want to portray it as. We'll give you a sample. We'll give you like a 1-minute sample of what we want to do. And then Lucasfilm says, that's the one I want. And we should have gotten 9 episodes of that particular story. With 15 minutes, you don't get enough of character development, especially with anime. You don't always catch on to it quickly. You need for it to breathe a little bit. Like, sometimes it takes me 3 or 4 episodes to really get into a series, especially anime. But once you're in, you're hooked. And then for them to just give it a small chunks, it just didn't make any sense. I just think it was a huge mistake on Disney and Lucasfilm's part to portray it in that way. But like I said, I think that some of the stuff was really good. Well, I wanted to point out the music was awesome. Good Lord. In every episode, whoever was doing the music for this, they need to get a raise because they were great. I think it was better than the Rise of Skywalker's music. It was unbelievable. I might have to look for that. But the episode I liked, now I liked the duel. I'm a big fan of the movie Ninja Scroll, and that seemed just like Ninja Scroll or Yojimbo, you know, like where a guy kind of comes into town, like a samurai, and the town is kind of overrun by a bunch of baddies. And then he just kind of takes them out by himself because he's so good. And that reminded me a lot of Ninja Scroll, and I liked it. Although it was weird, I will admit, especially the stuff with R2-D2 that he can fly around and he's got all the circuits, but he's wearing a bamboo hat. That was a little too much. See, now you didn't see the worst episode, which was Tatooine Rhapsody. It was so ridiculous.
I almost watched that because I was like, are they going to do a Star Wars Bohemian Rhapsody again? And I said, well, wait a second. This one sounds interesting, of the twins. And it's like, they're fighting for, you know.
Well, the Rhapsody one, like, okay, was, you know, there's a Padawan. Basically, the purge happens, which you don't really see much of. But what he does is he kind of loses his lightsaber. It gets destroyed. And he forms a band, you know, with like a couple other aliens. And they want to become rock stars throughout the galaxy. So they want Jabba to sponsor them so that they're like the world's famous rock group and all that. And basically, that's what the crap is all about. And they sound like Green Day. And it's just the weirdest freaking thing.
It sounds fun, though.
Yeah, you might like it, but the animation isn't that great. The Ninth Jedi was really good. I liked that a lot. You don't have to watch it, but I think that if you wanted to watch something good, I would watch that one. The Elder was very good, and Lopin Ocho was very good. There's some really good stories, and they do kind of get you interested in the characters. And like I said, I'm a huge fan of Japanese animation. Some of the animation reminded me of Hayao Miyazaki, which I'm a big fan of too. I think that I would say, to describe this, I would say it was 80% anime, 20% Star Wars. And I think that that's where people are going to be disappointed, because it just doesn't fit. It's kind of like, almost like when you see a Star Wars movie and all of a sudden you see them playing Pac-Man. It's just too feudal Japan, like, where it just doesn't fit for me. I don't know what I would rate it as, because again, it's a mixed bag, because some episodes are good, some are bad. But I would go in with low expectations, and maybe you like it, you know? Let's see if I think I said everything I wanted to say.
Okay.
Yeah. But, oh, all right, one last thing I wanted to mention too. What I like about anime is that the way that they do it, there's good and then there's evil. And what we've been seeing a lot with, like, a lot of these production companies, especially Disney and Warner Brothers, is they got to push social issues, political issues, inclusiveness. That doesn't happen in anime. It's just, again, there's a good person, there's a good guy, and there's a villain, a hero and a villain. And the hero is not always perfect. He has a journey, or she has a journey. And there's a lot of female protagonists in anime, and they're all awesome. Well, most of them are anyway. And you'll get behind their characters because they're very good at character development. And again, they're not perfect. They have to work their way to the journey in order to become successful at the end. And you don't see that anymore with what they're doing here, like in America. It's, you know, that the good guys are always gonna win at the end, and that there has to be some stupid social sort of message that they have to preach. You don't get preaching from anime. It's just like you're there to see heroes and villains go at it, and hopefully you're gonna have a good time and enjoy the animation. And I liked that it was 2D animation, not kind of like the Bad Batch, you know, like it might have been hand drawn, but I think that it could have been done on a computer too.
Well, sometimes, I mean, there is a certain charm to traditional two-dimensional animation versus, you know, computer animation.
Yeah.
You know, some shows just, it's once again, how stylized you're going to go. If you go old school, it does look good. It doesn't need to be three-dimensional all the time. Sometimes the old classic look fits the story, fits the environment you're going for.
The problem is now kids are so used to like Toy Story and Despicable Me, that's all they want. They won't accept traditional animation anymore, but I miss it. I really like the traditional animation. Anything, Fedra, you want to ask us anything, or you have any comments? Or
I mean, I appreciate the heads up, so that way when I, you know, when I see it, I won't be too harsh. I really like anime, and I do like the older animation too. I have an appreciation for it. But I do like the new stuff that they've, you know, over time have come with technology. So I would love to hear about the music and see, you know, see what's behind that, and, you know, your taste, just to see, you know, why is it so good, like you said. So I'll definitely look at first the episodes you recommend first.
Yeah, I would do that. Because there's some garbage ones in there. It's just that the music is adventure music, and it's very good adventure music that fits the action. And I could spot it right away. I was like, wow, this is so cool. It's music. All right, I guess we'll end it. So, Jack, can you tell everyone where they can find you?
You can always send me email at jackm@wdwnt.com.
And Fedra?
I'm on Facebook and Instagram, or you can email me at fedraekris@gmail.com.
And you can send me an email at joe@wdwnt.com, or send me a friend request on Facebook. And please check out Walt Disney World News Today, Disneyland News Today, and Universal Parks News Today for all your Disney and Universal news. Also, please visit the Carousel of Products, where there's a ton of fun WDWNT merchandise on sale. And finally, if you like our show and enjoy other WDWNT podcasts and would like to become a Patreon supporter, please visit the WDWNT Patreon page at www.patreon.com/WDWNT. And with this will be the end of WDWNT Nerd Alert Season 7, Episode 35. So until next time, see ya.
Good night, all, and be good to each other.
Good night, everyone.